Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
All right. We're trying this again. This is take two of Sparty Talk. Heavy metal music means we are live. DB, I can hear you, and it sounds like you can hear me.
Absolutely. Greetings, Spartan Nation.
Wow, that was a mess.
Hopefully that's not the sign of the Spartan football team.
Oh, my God. If the Spartan debut, if the Spartan football game against Central goes like the first shot of our practice. All right. So none of you know this because you didn't hear us like try and talk to each other for 4 minutes with it was just bizarre. But welcome to Sparty Talk, everyone.
Yeah.
I am Satchmo, glad to be here. That's the Thin Man DB. We got a full show. Football season starting. Game Friday against Central Michigan. DB, you and I, we were there when Michigan State first played Central Michigan in the 90s. And what was it? Craig Thomas fumbled.
Yeah.
Not once, but multiple times for two straight years.
Yeah. Sad, terrible times to relive. Yes.
Yes. So apparently, a journalist asked Courtney Hawkins about it, and Courtney Hawkins, who's on those teams, by the way, now wide receiver coach for Michigan State, like, man, I don't even remember that game. It's like, all righty then. It was so traumatic. He blocked it out.
Yeah.
So, playing Central Michigan, open the season, prime time Friday night game. And
yep.
So we'll get into that. We're going to get into Mel Tucker, and I think we'll spend some time on Mel Tucker as well. And DB, we're going to do two surprise topics. We're going to talk about Michigan State basketball a little bit, doing a scrimmage for money to raise money for Maui and the victims of a fire there. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about, DB, is Nebraska. And I know it's a Michigan State podcast. This has a Michigan State angle, I promise you. Nebraska just played volleyball in their football field. 92,000 people showed up to watch Nebraska's women's volleyball team play. How insane is that?
Wow.
It set the record for a women's sporting event. It doesn't matter, college or pro, Olympic, whatever. It set the record.
That's amazing.
How about that?
Yeah.
And look, Nebraska has an absolute gonzo women's basketball team with a gonzo following. The team is amazing. They've had a 20-year string of sellouts. I mean, it's amazing. And so the question is, well, there are two things. One is obviously if you build it, they will come. They built the program. They built it, they're going to come. And what does Michigan State need to do to get to that level? So we'll save that for the end because this happened tonight. A little breaking news. So, yeah, let's get the sound. Let's get the drops in early. But before we begin all of that sort of stuff, and as a way to dive into Michigan State's football season, just a reminder, Michigan State went 3-6 last year. They went 5-7 last year, 3-6 in the conference, 4-3 at home, 1-4 on the road. So that's what they did last year. We'd like to forget last year. Last year was bad. This year, TV, we're going to start this podcast with a little game. And the game is going to be watch it live or DVR.
Okay.
All right. We're going to go through the Michigan State schedule. And there's a point to all of this. And we're going to say whether we want to watch this game live or DVR.
Okay.
All right. Central Michigan.
Watch it live.
Yes, watch it live as well. I agree. Opening night, prime time. It's just a good way to kick off the season. Michigan State versus Richmond.
DVR.
Yeah, 100% DVR. Michigan State hosting Washington.
Watch it live.
Watch it live, agreed. Maryland at Michigan State.
Big Ten opener, watch it live.
Yeah, I'm DVR. This is a DVR game.
Okay.
Actually, part of me thinks it's a watch it live because this could be the difference between Michigan State going to a bowl game and not going to a bowl game. All right, I'll go watch it live.
Okay.
All right. Michigan State, Iowa.
I'm going to say watch it live. It's always interesting when Michigan State plays Iowa and on the road in that environment.
Yeah, I think this is a watch it live as well. Michigan State Rutgers.
DVR.
100% DVR. Then you got Michigan, Michigan State. That's an obvious watch it live.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan State, Minnesota.
I'm going to say watch it live.
Yeah, I think so. I agree.
Yep.
Nebraska, Michigan State.
DVR.
Yeah, that's a DVR game for me, too. Michigan State, Ohio State.
DVR. Going to be a bad game.
Oh, I'm going to watch it live. Bring on the punishment.
Spoken like a true Catholic.
Oh, man. Yes, absolutely. Michigan State, Indiana.
DVR.
Yeah. Then Penn State, Michigan State.
Oh, watch it live. It's going to be in Ford Field.
Yeah. So this is interesting, right? And the reason I wanted us to do this exercise is, one, show just how stacked the Michigan State schedule is this year, right? Even one of the games you didn't want to watch live, you wanted a DVR DVD. It's just you just don't want to see the beatdown. It had nothing to do with the quality of your opponent.
Right.
But this is a stacked, and I mean stacked, schedule. Not only is it a stacked schedule, let's go through the preseason top 10 teams that they have to play. Washington, Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. Four top 10 teams. This is an insanely difficult schedule. And I bring this up because when you think about this season, A, you've got to set reasonable expectations for what this team is going to do this year. And part of the reasonable expectation is in addition to the four top 10 teams, they've got a top 25 team in Iowa. And so you've got some real – and you've got a very good Minnesota team and a Nebraska team that always gives them trouble. And, I mean, you've got some issues in this schedule. So that's the first part of it. And so I just want reasonable expectations means you have to take a look at the schedule. The second reason I wanted to go through this exercise, DB, is this is the last time we might see a schedule this good. Put it out there. When they go to the whatever new scheduling thing where, you know, that you only have the protected rivalry and you're cycling through anything, when we're no longer in the Big Ten East, our schedule's going to suck.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
There might be one or two games every year that are worth watching, and the rest, DVR.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
yeah, conference expansion could lead to, you know, less enthusiasm.
Well, exactly, right? And this is one of the things I wanted to talk about. College football is deliberately degrading their product under the assumption that, you know, more money is just better, right? You know, they're doing it for the money. And in doing it for the money, they're creating a worse product. They're creating a worse football product because the fun of football is playing teams that you care about. And have we started caring about Maryland and Rutgers yet, DB?
No.
No. Have they been in the league how long?
Seems like 10 years.
At least, right? No, we do not care.
Nope.
We do not care. If the ACC and the Big East came a call and said, hey, give us these two back, we'd be like, yeah, take it.
Yeah. Well, FedEx them to
you. Yeah. Yeah, UPS ground, baby. what can Brown do for you? This is interesting. I think we can go through game by game, but I think 6-6, 5-7, seems 7-5, anywhere between 5 to 7 wins seems about right given this schedule.
Yeah, I mean, as a fan, I'm cautiously optimistic, but reality is, you know, those four teams you mentioned in the top 10 are four very likely losses.
Yes. Right?
Right.
I mean, so, all right, if you've got four losses to start the season, and then you've got Iowa and Minnesota, we have no, there's no need for me to go into, you know, my Minnesota trauma again. All right, that's six losses. Because those are two games on the road. Michigan State hasn't shown a propensity to win games on the road. They also haven't
right.
shown a propensity to beat Nebraska.
Right.
It's tough.
Yeah, it's dicey. You're gonna have to pull out a win or two somewhere that you're not supposed to.
Yeah, I mean you have to beat Maryland, because if you don't
beat
Maryland, where are the wins coming from?
Right.
I mean, on this schedule, DB, I look at two games that I say, yeah, they're gimme wins. Richmond and Rutgers.
Yep.
Central's a should win. All right, now you're at 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yep. There's no easy wins anywhere here, given what Michigan State is right now as a program.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the key, right? Given what Michigan State is as a program. No easy wins. All right. DB, you're so good at this. You provided a professional segue.
Thank
you. Yeah. Let's talk about what Michigan State is as a program. Mel Tucker said something interesting the other day, which is he believes that Michigan State can compete on the recruiting front in the facilities. He feels like you've got the facility upgrades that he needs. He feels like he can compete on social media. He feels like he can compete everywhere except for name, image, and likeness. And he said something to the effect of, hey, if we want to build, these aren't his exact words, it's a paraphrase, but if we want to build a national power, that means we have to compete at the highest levels of everything. We can't just compete in facilities and compete in this and that. We got to be competing in name, image, and likeness too. This is a man who acknowledged they were a year late in the name, image, and likeness thing, and they're playing catch-up. And this is a man that sounds frustrated with the amount of money he's getting via the NIL route to go recruit players. And the response of the fans has been quite interesting. There's been a good chunk of fans. Yeah, just how about giving them some of your $95
million? we knew that was coming.
Which is funny, but not the point. and then there are other people like, well, why don't you get better coaches? And once again, let's understand who Mel Tucker is as a football coach.
Mel Tucker as a football coach is kind of like Nick Saban as a football coach, where Nick Saban's like, all right, when Nick Saban went to Michigan State, the first thing he did was work on getting a better caliber of player in there. That's what he did. People mm-hmm. forget Tony Banks was a transfer, right? Why did he transfer in? Because Nick Saban wanted a better quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
All right. When Nick Saban, granted he left that year, but when Nick Saban had that, you know, great run at the end where, you know, the teams were getting better and better, and then they won the Citrus Bowl in 2000. That was the year Nick left for LSU right before the bowl game. Mm-hmm. There were pros on both sides of the ball, DB.
Yeah.
Right? He brought mm-hmm. in talent. Did he coach that talent up? Yes. Did he do a good job with it? Yes. But Nick Saban is from the standpoint, the school of thought that, hey, coaching might get you one or two wins or maybe two and a half wins. But the other 8, 9, 10 wins comes from having the best players. Mel Tucker is from that school as well. And so now I think it's reasonable for Michigan State fans who are not happy with Mel's comments for NIL to say, hey, you know, what kind of program do you want to be? Do you want to be the kind of program that recruits 4 and 5 stars, is always in the conversation, always going after the highest talent, is super deep and always playing in the deep end that way? Or do you want to be the kind of school that, you know, recruits at a lower level and, you know, develops its players and, you know, maybe plays in the transfer portal a bit and, you know, that's who you are. And once every 2 or 3 years you get a big run because you uncover some gems, and the rest of the times you're sort of a so-so team. And that's really what you want to talk about because, sorry, changing the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, that might get you a little further, but it's not going to change the fact that last year you weren't deep enough, right? The top-end talent might have been there, but injuries always happen. You have to have bigger, stronger, faster guys and lots of them in order to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
What type of team do we want to be, DB?
Well, in a perfect world, we could be Alabama, but we're not.
Yeah, we're not. But that's do we want to be Alabama? I mean, is that what we aspire to be?
Yeah, we want to be Georgia or Alabama or something, you know, in the neighborhood.
Okay, if that's what we aspire to be, then we got to pony up that NIL money.
Right.
All right. I mean, look, this is the way college football works. Now, look, NIL is stupid. All right?
Mm-hmm.
I get that. NIL money is stupid. These players should be paid. If these players were getting a percentage of the revenue instead of NIL money, it would be an even playing field.
Mm-hmm.
This is what players should be doing. You see these new deals that are being struck. You see the new Big Ten deal. You see the ACC trying to get out of its, the Florida State trying to get out of its ACC deal, and if they don't get out of the ACC deal, they said, all right, well, give us more money because we're the best football program. But you want to know what? You want to know who generates that revenue? The players. Give them a cut. All right?
All right.
These players are, no one will say it, but I'll say it, they're employees.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? So pay them.
That's right.
That solves everything. In the absence of
yep.
paying them, we got NIL, which is stupid. And
right.
NIL means that alumni and donors and boosters have to donate a lot of money on an annual basis just to compete to be good. And that's pretty damn stupid, but that's what needs to be done. At a minimum, if you want Michigan State to be a top-tier football program, you can't complain when a coach says, yeah, we don't have enough NIL money. Look, Saban complained about it. Ryan Day complained about it a couple years ago. Harbaugh would complain about it if he wasn't suspended. There's just
this is the way it is. And so, on the other hand, you know, if you want to be the school that identifies players and develops them and does a really good job and, you know, finds players flying under the radar and is good for, you know, maybe can piece together a 3 or 4 year run and then goes through a little slump and can piece together another 3 or 4 year run. Hey, we enjoyed being that too. Look, we had a good run with that with D'Antonio.
Yep.
Right? It's extremely difficult. And then the other thing is, if that's the school you want to be, then stop complaining about how many stars, you know, missing out on the 5 and 4 star recruits.
Yeah.
Well, stop complaining about it.
We can rewind to a conversation about recruiting stars, which we hate talking about on this podcast. But
yes,
if we go back to the disaster that was 2016, and in that time frame, we had a lot of 4 stars on this team, and a lot of bad things happened.
Yeah, but the bad things didn't happen because they were 4 stars. The bad things happened because we had the wrong people.
Right, exactly.
All right, and this is the – I think this is the thing that fans say, oh, we tried a bunch of 4 stars. It didn't work. Let's go back to doing it. No. The reason
no.
it didn't
no.
work is you had the wrong people.
Right, right.
That's just the way it is. I mean, so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. Actually, to me, what I find interesting is there might be an interesting middle ground here, right?
Right.
And the middle ground would be, hey, let Alabama and Georgia and, you know, all these other schools hoover up all the 5-star and 4-star players. They can't all play.
Right.
They really do want to play.
Yep.
Then you pick up all your 5-star and 4-star players through the transfer portal, and, you know, you supplement it with the depth guys that you pick up recruiting, and there you go.
Yeah, exactly. The transfer portal is like the waiver wire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, but Deion Sanders thinks so.
Yeah, what he did is pretty incredible.
Yeah, and so, I mean, what Deion Sanders did is, look, when you're a new coach, all like the NCAA actually relaxes the rules. And so you can bring in a lot more players, and you can kick players off the team. And this goes
yeah.
back to why these are employees, right? Deion's like, well, you're not meeting my standards. You're off the team. That wouldn't happen the traditional student-athlete, right? You're a student, you've given a scholarship, you got to coach them up, you got to make them better, you live with the decision you make, all that, sort of, none of that. And it's really interesting how, people are okay with Deion treating these people like professional athletes and cutting them and kicking them off the team and telling them to transfer, all that sort of stuff. When it comes to paying the money, it's like, oh, no, we can't do that. Well, let me tell you what, if the University of Florida or University of Miami comes a knocking on Deion's door with another $10 million to coach for them, prime time is going back to Florida.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
All about the Benjamins.
Yep.
But yeah.
Can't blame them.
Can't blame them. Can't blame them. It's just a side. You know who Kylian Mbappe is, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So Kylian Mbappe was offered like $600 million or $700 million by the Saudi team, a Saudi professional soccer team, to come play for 1 year. 1 year, DB. Now, let's be clear: Kylian Mbappe is not hurting for money. He can make a lot of money. He can make a couple hundred million in a year, right? A couple hundred million, DB, is not 600 plus million for 1 year and no commitment to play beyond that. Would you, if you were at the height of your athletic powers, say, you want to know what? Let me take a year vacation and go play in Saudi Arabia for $600 million.
The money is extremely tempting.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All moral issues aside.
Yeah, it sounds like you do it, DB.
It's not a slam dunk that I would do it.
Maybe
but
you'd have to think about it.
Yeah, I would think about it.
Yeah.
It's not an easy decision.
Yeah, and that's the point I'm trying to make is it's an easy
right.
decision when it's not your money.
Right.
Right? It's an easy decision when it's not your money, but when it's your money, oh, that changes it. Because let me tell you what, $600 million for 1 year, woo, in a sport where you can get injured and life changes in a second, oh, yeah, you better believe I'd be thinking about it.
You know, sorry.
Go ahead.
You're on to something there. I wonder if Mel Tucker was making a plea to the Saudi government to get the NIL money.
I'm just waiting for the first sovereign wealth fund to invest in college football. I'm dead serious. I know.
I'm joking, but you're right.
Yes.
Coming, yeah.
It's coming. Look, the Qatar Sovereign Wealth Fund is invested in Monument Sports in Washington, D.C. That
mm-hmm.
means that a sovereign wealth fund now owns a piece of the Washington Wizards, the Washington Capitals, the Washington Mystics, and potentially the Washington Nationals.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is
yeah.
the way sports are going. When do you think a university is seriously going to say no to a sovereign wealth fund that says, hey, we'll just throw $100 million a year into your NIL pool?
Nope. And they pay in cash. They pay in
yeah.
cash.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you know what's going to happen? Every fan of that team's gonna be like, oh, I knew they were good all along. That's what's going to happen. It's sports washing at its finest. But this goes back to money, right? Which is
right.
that when money becomes part of the equation, things change.
Mm-hmm.
They just do.
Yeah.
And
so,
decisions you would make in a vacuum become much different.
So I'm curious sort of where you're going with this because I'm seeing that, what I first thought was kind of outrageous, that Mel Tucker would start off giving an exclusive interview to Graham Couch, you know, the Lancet State Journal, and say these things. Now, I admire him for speaking the truth. The timing is a little weird, but then on the other hand, when we're talking about a year from now, and, you know, the pond gets more filled with some heavy hitters like USC and, you know, Washington's coming into the Big Ten or whatever you want to call us now, the big Oregon, UCLA. That's a cry for, hey, we got to get our act together here.
Yeah. You talk about money. Oregon's got Nike money.
Yeah.
All right. That's a whole different level of money.
Yeah.
And you don't think Mel Tucker's noticed that Oregon's beat him for a few recruits recently?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So, to me, this Mel Tucker thing is two things. Well, maybe it's three. We'll go with three. One is a bit of a level setting, right? Which is to say, hey, we still don't have the players here at Michigan State because we're struggling with NIL. So
you know, let's tap the brakes on a 10-3 or 10-2 record with the schedule that we've got. So that's the first type of level setting. The second type of level setting is, hey, donors, let's get with it.
Right.
We can't compete without this. So if you want us to win, we got to be competing at the highest levels. We need this. And then the third type of level setting is, hey, don't be surprised if I start looking around at other schools that are willing to pony up the cash, because this is how I coach. I coach by getting the best players in and then setting them up for success.
Right.
And if I'm at a school that isn't committed to getting the best players in, see ya. I think it was a three-pronged message.
Now, on the last point, though, you think he'd really walk away from all the money Michigan State's paying?
Yeah.
Really?
I do.
Hmm.
I think if he got a job at a school that's willing to put the NIL resources behind him getting the best players, I think he'd walk away in a heartbeat.
Interesting.
And I kind of get where he's coming from. And this goes back to why I opened the discussion. Look, I'm not claiming Mel Tucker is the best football coach ever. I am not making that claim. What I am saying is his approach mirrors the approach of the Georgias and the Alabamas of the world, which is you win with players. Go get the best players. It's not easy. And it takes a while to build that culture and build, you know, that reputation and go ahead and do it. It just does. And when you throw NIL into the mix, holy cow, it becomes more difficult. And I think that's what he's experiencing right now. And so it's either up to Michigan State donors and alumni to get the NIL collectives off the ground and fund it at a high level, or it's up to the AD and the president of the university and say, hey, you want to know what? Forget NIL. It's dumb. We know it's dumb. Let's call them what they are. They're employees. Let's start paying them.
I wanted to get your take while we're talking about this before we move on. Mike Valente from 97.1, I don't even know what they're called. The Detroit Sports Ticket. That's right.
Yes. Yeah.
97.1 FM, The Ticket. And I enjoy Mike Valente, Michigan State alum. I personally thought that I read some of his comments via Sports Illustrated about this Mel Tucker thing. And one of the things that stood out to what Mike Valente said, and I want your take, Satchmo, is having to do with the fact that name and likeness doesn't, you know, have anything to do with how you coach these guys up and when they're fumbling the ball and missing kicks. But I hear you saying likewise, you know, the opposite, that does. You care to comment on what he's saying?
Oh, we lost DB.
No, I'm here.
Oh, you're back. Okay.
Yeah, I'm here. I couldn't hear you for a few minutes.
All right. Well.
But I understand or assume you made some good points.
Oh, yes. I was on fire. I was on fire. The basic point I made was, hey,
coaching gets you, what, two games? It turns you from a 5-7 team to a 7-5 team. And
yeah.
a 7-5 team that still can't beat Ohio State, Penn State, or Michigan. So what's the point?
Right.
What's the point? You got me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, what I hear of Valente and the fans is frustration. And, you know, a year ago when we were coming off that 11-3 season, even though Kenneth Walker left, there were such high expectations. And you can never really believe, except for a few teams, you can never really believe what the prognosticators say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can't pay attention to that junk, especially as fans, because, you know, they might be right maybe about, say, like Georgia, you know, but it's kind of a mixed bag all the way through the rest, you know. Whoever's number three right now might end up being 16, you know, or I don't even know, you know, or somebody from 10 might, you know, drive up to be number one. I don't know, you know. Sports is a funny thing, and I think that this is all frustration talking. If Mel Tucker, you know, had a 9-3 season last year and say we beat Michigan or whatever, I don't think we're having these discussions about this stuff.
Yeah, but well, first of all, you're right. I mean, if you had a 9-3 season, we're not having this talk. But you know, part of it is the reason we didn't have a 9-3 season is all of our best players got injured.
Right.
And when your
injuries are a huge thing.
Injuries are a huge thing, but you want to know the difference between Michigan State and Ohio State isn't the starting 11 on either side of the ball. That's not the difference. The difference is when Ohio State gets injuries, and every team has injuries. When Ohio State has injuries, they're getting people just as good coming onto the field. And when Michigan State has injuries, the fall off is pretty significant. Right? And so
right.
Michigan State can't replace the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people that get injured, but Ohio State can. Alabama
right.
can. Clemson can. Georgia can. And so where Michigan State needs to get to is where they can replace them.
Right. And Michigan State is in the big giant bucket with everybody else, basically. I mean, you just
yeah.
mentioned the most relevant teams in college football over the last whatever many years, and that's it.
That's it.
Yep. Not even Notre Dame or Michigan can really say that. And Michigan will thump its chest and say, well, we've been in the college football playoff, whatever, blah, blah. Well, I don't care.
No,
you know?
Neither do I. You know, leading the list of irrelevant programs are Michigan, Notre Dame, and Florida State.
Yeah, Florida State ranked number 3, I think, or 2, yeah. depending on what you're looking at.
They are not around. That doesn't mean they're not good. It's just they have not been relevant. Just haven't been. You can throw Florida in there. You can throw the U in there. I mean, Miami, it's just not relevant. I mean, your relevant teams
right.
have been Alabama, Georgia, and Clemson. That's your list.
Right, right. That's your list. Yep. It's very short. Ohio State is even sort of like not even quite on the list either. I mean, they're kind of maybe as far as the big teams go, you know.
Yeah, Ohio State would be the fourth. They'd be the fourth
yeah.
team on the list. No, but they're not as relevant as Georgia, Alabama, or Clemson.
Right.
But they're the fourth team on the list. Michigan's not on the list. Notre Dame not on the list. USC not on the list. You know, all nice teams to talk about during the regular season.
Right.
And this goes back to the beginning of the show, DB, which is the problem with college football is the product is being degraded. Because college football is at its best when fans care about its team. But if your college football product is playoff or bust, or if your college football product is, you know, championship or bust,
and your team loses 2-3 games to start the season, well, fans aren't going to care because they know, all right, we're done. Can't win. I've been told by the media and by the TV and my university and my conference and my regional channel, all that sort of stuff, the rest of these games don't matter. This is the problem.
Right.
If you're telling people that the games don't matter, then why are people going to watch? Why are people going to go? So.
Right. Watering down the product.
Yep. They are.
Yep. Yeah, it's very bad. And you look at some of the teams, you know, the traditional, you know, sort of Big Ten teams, and, you know, we can be upset about Michigan State's position, but I'm going to turn your attention to teams like Illinois and to some extent Purdue, Northwestern right now. Not good.
No?
No. Illinois is in really bad shape.
Yeah, I mean, Purdue at least wins games.
Purdue does, but kind of rises up every so often. When Wisconsin's been a little down, but I expect that to change.
Yeah, with Luke, I don't want to be an East Lansing pickle. I just want our next game to go to Wisconsin and just beat their ass. That's exactly what I want.
Yeah, well, you know, and I'm talking about this in the sense that, you know, of these divisions, and this is the last year of this because, you know, the Big Ten goes to this new format next year where it's just one giant division and the top two teams go to the Big Ten championship.
Yeah, our schedules are going to suck.
And, yeah, we're not going to see all these teams every year anymore except for Michigan.
That's it. I mean, there's going to be a year, DB, where our schedule is going to be Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, Purdue, Minnesota, and Rutgers.
Yeah.
All right, I'm just making that up, but that's what the schedule is going to be.
Right.
You tell me who's going to want to go to any of those games.
Right.
I mean, say what you want about being in the Big Ten East, hardest division one of the hardest divisions in college football. Man, you got Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State every year. You had games to look forward to.
Yeah.
Just a mess. You mentioned the expansion teams, UCLA, USC, Oregon, and Washington.
Okay.
In order, rank the games that you would like to go to see on the road.
Interesting. Well, they all have great environments, but, you know, I think for me, the first one that comes to my mind is, this is a tough question. I mean, USC has that football tradition.
Yes.
However, you know, Eugene, Oregon has turned into quite a festive atmosphere on Saturdays.
Agreed.
So I sort of think that, you know, and the Spartans have played in Eugene a couple times in the last 25 years. So I think Eugene would actually, for me, be first. And I think, you know, last year Spartan fans got to go to Washington. That's also a great atmosphere, but I think Oregon would be first. How about you?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA, in that order. Now, my answer might have been different if you and I hadn't gone to the Rose Bowl. When Michigan State went to the Rose
right.
Bowl, then UCLA
right.
would probably be at the top of the list. But I've seen the game at the Rose Bowl, and
yeah.
I'm not interested in UCLA. And so, yeah, Oregon, and the atmosphere of UCLA games is terrible.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think the order is Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA.
That's right.
Yeah. But, you know, the USC game, we could stop off with some good food trucks on the way.
Right.
Sashmo loves his taco trucks in L.A. Loves the taco trucks. So we haven't talked since the whole expansion thing. You and I talked, but we haven't talked on the podcast about the expansion thing. And this seems to be a good way to delve into it a little bit. How are we feeling about expansion? You know, I said at the top, it's degrading the product. I don't think there's any question that it's degrading the product. It's taking what is a product that's based on local and, you know, regional rivalries and turning it into a national conference in which most teams don't care about each other whatsoever. I mean, at least Michigan State has some sort of history with Oregon and Washington in recent years and has some sort of history. We all talk about history, has lots of history with USC. you know, Maryland and Rutgers. Well,
yeah,
need I go further?
Not so much.
Yeah, not so much. But all right, I kind of get it for football. I kind of get it for basketball. It's a money grab in football. It's a money grab in basketball. TB. I mean, I can see where it works in other sports. I can see it working in baseball. You know, I can see it working in volleyball and all this sort of stuff. But the amount of travel that is involved and the expenses that's involved for the non-revenue sports, my goodness, what are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, you know, the TV money, I assume, is going to pay for this, right?
Yeah, but who pays for the toll on the lives of the students? Oh, yes, we're all about student-athlete safety, and we're all about making sure they study and get good grades. Oh, yeah, but by the way, take this exam on the red-eye back from Los Angeles to East Lansing. What kind of...
Yeah. Yeah.
It's problematic, TV.
Yeah. I mean, you're asking a lot of a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give these students credit. At the end of their 4 years of school, they're going to have better time management skills than you and I have right now. I can promise you that.
Oh yeah,
that's for sure. Yeah, I'm not a fan of this. Look, I think where this ends up, I really believe where this ends up is that, and this part is scary, right? Is college football will break away, and it's going to create, you know, call it 64 teams and four 16-team conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, based on geography. And that's what you're going to have. So you'll go 64, you know, you have a regular season, have your whatever playoff, go into a championship, and this is where it's going. Because it is unsustainable in its current format.
Right.
Just unsustainable in its current format. And I suspect college basketball is headed the same way.
Yeah.
Instead of 300-something schools, it'll come down to 128 of the big money schools, of which, you know, 96 reach a tournament, which makes the regular season even more meaningless than it is right now, and then you go into the tournament.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is the direction we're going in.
Yeah. And talk about crazy. I mean, actually, the travel for the basketball players, I mean, at least football is a once-a-week thing.
Yeah. You're right. And that was, yeah, football's once a week. You're right, basketball players are traveling all the time. Hockey, well, you know, there's no hockey involved, but baseball, volleyball, they're traveling all the time.
Mm-hmm.
This is not good. And
nope.
my last thing on the conference realignment, I mean, I think that's where we're headed to the 16, you know, four 16-team things, but Michigan State has to be really careful about navigating its way through the new, whatever the new college football landscape is going to be. Because Oregon State and Washington State ended up without a conference, essentially. You know, so same with Stanford and Berkeley. But I'm focusing on Oregon State and Washington State.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm focusing on them is those are two schools that are a lot like Michigan State. They care about football. They care about sports. You know, they're decent-sized schools. And they got left out of the mix. I mean, if you wanted to do a radical realignment of college football, a radical realignment of college football, all right, and you said, hey, let's make this 32 teams, all right? 32 teams, and you play it out like an NFL schedule. What, there are 32 NFL teams, right? 31, 32.
Mm-hmm.
32 NFL teams. You say, all right, what is the NFL, what is the college football version of the NFL with just 32 teams? Let me tell you what. A, this is a possibility. And B, not only is it a possibility, but does Michigan State even make the cut in this 32-team format?
Right. It's not a lot.
No. 32 teams isn't a lot. I mean, let's take the obvious teams that make the cut. Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia. Clemson.
Yep.
All right. That's three for sure. Then I guess Ohio State, four.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Those four will be in it for sure. Michigan, for better or for worse, is going to be in there.
Yep.
That's five. Texas is going to be in there. All right. That's six. USC is going to be in there. That's seven. Those are the only – oh, Notre Dame will be in there. Eight.
Yeah.
All right. So you've gone from 32 to 24. Still haven't gotten to Michigan State.
No.
Auburn, do they get in ahead of Michigan State?
At this moment? I'm not sure about that one. There's some other.
Yeah,
Tennessee does.
Tennessee does.
Yeah.
All right. We're at nine.
LSU would.
LSU, 10. Texas A&M.
Not sure about that one.
Okay.
Oklahoma
Oregon.
Does.
Well, Oregon would.
Oh, Oregon, yeah.
Yeah. That's 11. Oklahoma, 12. We're running out of spots for Michigan State here. Penn State would get in. That's 13.
Wisconsin would get in.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay, that's 14. 14 out of 32 filled up already.
Yeah.
Florida State probably gets in.
Yep.
Okay, that's 15. Miami?
Not sure about that.
Florida
does, though. Florida does.
Okay.
Yep.
So what, we're up to 16? 15, 16?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. We got half the league filled. We still haven't gotten to Michigan State. You see the problem
here? Yeah.
Now, my guess is Michigan State slides in, you know, gets in, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there are no guarantees.
No guarantees?
I mean, Baylor right now, they would seem to be in it.
Baylor?
Yeah.
I think Baylor. I'd say TCU before Baylor.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. Right now, Colorado would be in there before MSU, just given, you know, if Deion Sanders is still there.
Yeah, but
they're a wild card.
Yeah, they're a wild card. But the point is that, you know, they're going to go with powerhouse brand names.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why Michigan State's got to be careful as they navigate this future. Because the one thing you don't want to end up is either Oregon State or Washington State with no seat at the table.
Right. And so if we had this league, do the other teams just play in, like, this other subdivision?
Yeah.
If they want to keep having football?
Yeah, if they keep having football, they play, they've got to figure it out.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, and the other thing, too, is, and we come back to this every year when we start the season, and I haven't looked at the latest stats, but, I mean, have the numbers of kids playing football, are they still declining?
Depends on what part of the country you're in.
Yeah. So the Northeast, probably very much so.
Yeah.
The Southeast, probably less so.
Less so. Southeast, yeah, less so.
Right.
Hell, they're playing football all year round there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different beast down south.
Yeah. Because a lot of the Spartan transfers are coming out of the South and the Southeast. I'm seeing North Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Texas, those states.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's a surplus of players down there.
Yeah.
If you're going to be successful, you got to be able to recruit staff.
Yep.
All right. We got a quarterback battle.
Yeah.
Here in East Lansing. Caton Hauser versus Noah Kim. Peyton Thorne, the incumbent quarterback, transferred to Auburn TV.
Yes. Hello, Auburn.
And let me tell you what. I think this transfer was interesting. Because I actually think Peyton Thorne is a good quarterback. Not a great quarterback, a good quarterback.
Mm.
I think Mel Tucker was right to open up the competition and say, hey, this is a competitive race. Where I disagree with what's happened right now is I think Spartan Nation had a role in running Peyton Thorne out of town. Peyton Thorne is a kid that played hurt and played injured and saw his play diminish as a result. He also played behind a terrible offensive line, which is why he was hurt and injured. And Michigan State fans made it clear they wanted him gone. And so you better believe Peyton Thorne knew that Spartan Nation wasn't standing up for him. In addition, you know, I could see him saying, hey, when I'm healthy and right and with good players, I'm a really good quarterback. I didn't have that last season. You've opened up the competition. And like I said, I understand why, because Peyton Thorne hadn't seized the job completely. Plus, Mel Tucker's recruiting players saying, hey, you're going to have a chance to compete for the job. Well, he's got to stay true to his word on that. The only thing where I would, you know,
say, hey, Mel Tucker's got to do a better job of communicating is, you know, Peyton Thorne shouldn't be learning about, oh, it's going to be an open competition in the press conference, right? And
right.
So I think that part just needs to be cleaned up. But,
yeah.
Look, you know, we talk about, you know, Peyton Thorne's clearly an SEC caliber quarterback because he started for Harvard. And so the real question is, you know, what role did Spartan Nation have in running Peyton Thorne out of town? What role did Mel Tucker have in running Peyton Thorne out of town? And is Michigan State going to be better off with Noah Kim and Caden Hauser over Peyton Thorne, or would we be a better team with Peyton Thorne? You know, I realize I did the terrible journalism thing of asking like three questions at once, but I'll let you take them in any order you want.
Well, you know, they're all equal parts to blame, I think. And then you have the, you know, you have Peyton Thorne. I mean, he could have stayed and fought for his job.
Yeah.
You know, and also if he looked around, the Spartans may have a pretty darn good offensive line this year.
That's what I'm hoping.
Right. And so I hope that we're not sitting here in a few months going, gosh, Peyton Thorne's tearing it up at Auburn. God, if he'd only stayed that one more year, you know. But who's going to know? We don't know. But I think what you say about, you know, the communication with Tucker, that's really where it starts. And then the fans, you know, Michigan State fans have developed a real nasty reputation. Michigan State football fans have become beyond impatient with things. And I've even found myself being impatient at times. And it's easy to give up and quit quickly without really looking at things. And, you know, the fact is that, you know, people were a bit spoiled and surprised by the success in 2021, you know, with Walker. But he was gone from the team. And so were some other kids. And so you take that away. And then there's all these injuries. You know, Michigan State is not, like you said, Alabama or Ohio State with a stacked second string. You know?
Yeah.
That's just bad luck. And actually, I want to point out that the Penn State game aside, last season, the defense started to rise to the occasion a little bit in the last part of the season. Even though the Spartans lost in Ann Arbor, they still held Michigan to a bunch of field goals. And then they got that good win at Illinois right after that, after all the turmoil. And the defense had a big part in that. And so, you know, to sort of answer your question back again, it really comes down to the kid, but Michigan State, you know, the program itself internally and the fans kind of made the choice pretty easy. And also, too, and maybe you can shed light on this, but the Keon Coleman thing happens before or at, sort of at the same time as the Peyton Thorne thing. And, you know, were those guys tight? You know, were they tight,
but more importantly, I think the Peyton Thorne decision cemented Keon Coleman's thought process. I think he planned on transferring. He was thinking about it. He wanted to do it. He was going to do it. And then when he saw Peyton Thorne transfer, he's like, oh yeah, I'm done too.
Right.
And it's interesting because it seems, and this is the really interesting part, it does seem that both the offensive line and the defensive line are significantly better than last year. They just thought.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
Well, we hope. We'll see. Because if you can't push around Central Michigan, you have not improved.
yeah, that'll be pretty apparent right away.
Yeah. It will. I mean, and you want to see a push. You know, you don't want to see him play even. You don't want to see better technique and all that. You want better technique, but, you know, you don't want to be winning off of technique against Central Michigan. You want to be winning because you're bullying them up and down the field. And so, I mean, to me, it's interesting that, you know, they chose to leave despite the fact that, you know, there were going to be some improvements. And I guess it's the nature of college football as it is. You know, Peyton Thorne did not want to put his career in the hands of a coaching staff that clearly didn't trust him. And so he wanted to go to someplace to get a fresh start. He got one. And Keon Coleman's like, yeah, I was thinking about transferring, and you want to know what? I don't know. I got a freshman, you know, I got this guy that hasn't thrown before. I want to go to the NFL next year. Let me go to a place that I know is going to get me the ball with a decent quarterback.
Right.
Or if not a decent quarterback, a decent offense. So I do think that's what happened. But, look, we're going to find out Friday whether the offensive line and defensive line are improved. If they are, this has a chance to be a really competitive team.
Yep.
And if they're not, it's going to be a long season. So we're going to learn a lot on Friday.
Yep. And all special teams aside, because there's so little that I can even say about that I have no idea. I mean, we could sit a practice for 6 weeks, and we still wouldn't know who the kicker is yet, or the punter is yet, or the returner is yet. But taking that away from the equation, you know, we talked about Tucker, and the fans, of course, aren't going to stand another 5-win season. All right. Someone will try to get us to understand a 6-win season, and that will be hard. But I think anything less than a bowl, and I gotta feel like Tucker's probably gone.
But my question, I don't think so. I think Tucker, because of the pandemic, he gets one more year for sure. Because first of all, he showed up late, right? So he didn't even have to get a chance to get a recruiting class. I mean, he got a pandemic that blows up a second recruiting class. He's really behind the eight ball. I mean, through no fault of his own.
Right.
So I feel like just by default, he's going to get one more year, and I think he deserves it. That's the first part of that equation. But here's, to me, what I'm interested in. Actually, I almost don't care what Michigan State's record is this year. I want to see them playing well. I want to see that they've got depth on the offensive line, that they got depth on the defensive line. I want to see that they have the size needed to compete at a championship level. I want to see,
right.
I want to see a team that is competitive against, or is building towards being competitive against the best teams.
Right.
And clearly would go into next year as, all right, yeah, sure, we only won 5 games, but you want to know what? This looks like a 10 or 11 win team next year. I'd be quite happy with that.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
And
kick the ball through the uprights, but I'd be quite happy with that.
Well, you know, Tucker did go and change things up with the kicking. And, you know, you can't replace Bryce Behringer, but at least he shook it up. He's not just trotting the same people back out there. But
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, what we don't know with kickers. But, you know, I hear what you're saying. I think that I was thinking about something along that line, too. If I'm watching Michigan State football this year and they're just getting manhandled and blown off the field and they stay healthy, and it's still not good, then there's going to be a lot of questions.
Yes.
And then who knows what the future is after that. It's probably very murky. But if they're a 5-win team, but they've been competitive in all the games, especially the ones that they should have lost. You know, if it's a play here, a play there, you know, as much as those games sting, I would rather have it be a play there, a play here, than get blown off the field by 40.
Agreed.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we may be surprised, because the one thing that happens a lot with Michigan State football, in the history of Michigan State football, is that no matter who the coach has been, somehow when the expectations are raised too high, MSU doesn't always deliver. Not always, and it's not always that way, but many of the times. But when MSU has a season like last season, and then they're sort of under the radar, sometimes we could be surprised.
Yeah, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And throwing out one more thing, and this is just sort of a mild concern to me, and I want to see what happens this year. How much is the playing surface at Spartan Stadium contributing to some of these injuries?
It's a natural grass surface. I wouldn't think it would contribute that much at all.
It just seems like we have so many of them.
Yeah. I think it's two parts. I think one is because we pay attention to Michigan State football. We don't pay attention to other schools and other teams to realize that, oh, wait a minute, they've got lots of injuries too. So I think that's the first part. And I think the second part is Mel Tucker has admitted he's changed his practice habits and training habits, saying he's got to get his guys on the field and keep them on the field.
Right.
So maybe there's some bad luck involved. Maybe, you know, there's some regression to the mean means we'll have some fewer injuries. You know, maybe we just had bad training regimens. I don't know.
Right.
It is weird. But I don't think it's the surface of the field. I don't think it has anything to do with the surface of the field.
Okay.
You brought up Bryce Berenger. So I've got a question. Does that mean we have to root for the Patriots? Or do we just have to root for the Patriots' offense to suck so we can see Berenger fun?
Well, you might not have to root very hard for the Patriots' offense to suck. I think we'll be seeing a lot of Bryce Berenger in New England games this year.
All right, so let's wrap up the football talk here. Record prediction season, what do you think the record is? What are you expecting?
All right. I think I am envisioning, let me see here, giving it some thought here real quick. I'm just going to say it out loud. I think Central Michigan and Richmond are win.
Okay.
So that's, you know, I'm going with the overall record here. So 2-0.
Yep.
Washington is a loss. 2-1. Maryland is a win. 3-1. On the road at Iowa is a loss. 3-2. Rutgers is a win. 4-2. Michigan is a loss. 4-3. At Minnesota will be a win. 5-3. Nebraska will be a win, 6-3. At Ohio State, loss, 6-4. At Indiana, win, 7-4. Penn State and Ford Field, upset win, 8-4.
You got 8-4.
Yep.
All right, I'll try running through this. I got a win, win against Central, win against Richmond, loss to Washington. Lost to Maryland, so they're 2-2 to start.
Mm-hmm.
Lost to Iowa puts them at 2-3. Win against Rutgers puts them at 3-3. I think they lose to Michigan 3-4. I think they beat Minnesota to go to 4-4. I think they lose to Nebraska to go to 4-5. I think they lose to Ohio State to go to 4-6. I think they beat Indiana to go to 5-6, and then they lose to Penn State to go 5-7. And I think they make a bowl team because there will not be enough eligible bowl eligible teams.
So the Spartans will be redeemed from last year with the 5-7 record and get into the bowl game. Okay. Well.
But, but I think I think this 5-7 record is significantly better than last year's 5-7 record. And the reason I say that is because their opponents are significantly better.
All right. That's true. I think that, you know, I'm not sure what to say about Maryland yet. I mean, Maryland is an improving program, and we could be surprised. I think Michigan State can be competitive on the field with Iowa. I don't think that Iowa is going to, you know, blow Michigan State off the field in that game. I'm not sure about Nebraska yet. There's a lot of unknowns, but I feel like because that game is at home, Spartans will have a chance. You know,
yeah.
Nebraska is not what they once were. Minnesota lost a couple key guys, including that quarterback and the running back that was really good that tore everybody apart for a while. So that's going to make a big difference. And, you know, we'll just see where things go. Who knows?
Well, I hope you're right.
I hope I'm right. Yeah, I mean, I hope that, you know, I'm thinking about that, you know, slogan, you know, the relentless, and I'm thinking about, okay, you know, some of these guys have chips on their shoulders, and I always believe it starts at the line, and if your offensive line stays healthy and they're good, and the defensive line is healthy and they turn out to be good, bring them on.
I'll tell you what, the defensive line is the part of the team that I'm most excited about right now. I feel
mm-hmm.
like the defensive line's got some big, strong, fast players that can be disruptive. And it's been a long – and not only that, they've got depth. And
yeah.
I feel like it's been a long time since we could say that.
Yeah, I think we're looking at a defense that, to me, showed things last year, again, the Penn State game aside. I think they showed some things last year that were very hopeful on that side of the ball, and that's huge. If they can cause disruption to the opposing offenses, it could put the offense in some great situation.
Yep. I agree. I worry about special teams. That's why I have it at 5-7. I worry about kicking field goals. I worry about punting. I worry about covering kicks, and I worry about covering punts.
Yeah.
I think that about covers it.
Well, you know, and you look around college football, and let's be honest here, MSU is not 100% alone with the bad special teams, but you would think that they would really give that some focus. I mean, look at Alabama sometimes. I mean, maybe that's a Nick Saban thing, but,
I think they're trying. You know, they're trying. It's just not a good situation.
Yeah.
All right, Michigan State basketball, DB. They were going to have a secret scrimmage with Tennessee. They're going to open up the scrimmage with Tennessee on October 29th at the Breslin Center with the proceeds going to the Hawaii Community Foundation, Maui Strong Fund. This, realistically, is what college basketball should be about, what college sports should be about. Uplifting the community, bringing in, spreading joy. And to see Tom Izzo and Rick Barnes, but, you know, we know this is Tom Izzo and not Rick Barnes, take this step, especially considering the amount of times Michigan State's played in the Maui Invitational, and, you know, they're scheduled to play there next year. Class act, but I'm so happy that Michigan State is doing this. This is what we should be doing. This is the way it should happen. This is what college sports are about. And it just brings joy knowing that this is happening.
Yeah. No, I agree. Tom Izzo is always, you know, he's got the biggest heart. And, you know, everybody should be doing this, really. I mean, those fires in Maui were the worst in U.S. history.
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable to think about.
You're right. I mean, that's a stunning statement, the worst in U.S. history.
Mm-hmm.
And we should be doing everything we can to help.
Mm-hmm.
the victims of that fire. All right.
Yeah.
Last note that I just want to bring up. You brought it up at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
92,000 people to watch a women's volleyball game. They played it in the football stadium in Lincoln. And good for them. Look, this has been a volleyball program over the course of the last 20 to 30 years, DB. Nebraska volleyball has been dominant. I mean, just
yep.
dominant. They've been fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But they haven't just dominated college volleyball. They've uplifted the sport in the state of Nebraska. So you get all of a sudden, you get all of these girls in Nebraska that want to play volleyball and go play for the Huskers. And then, you know, they're getting recruits from all over the country. They're doing great things, but they've really elevated the sport in the process. Now, it's not like Nebraska was volleyball country. They've had this historic claim to volleyball, and, you know, they just happened to fulfill it. No, that's not the way this worked.
Right.
The way this worked is they went out and hired some great coaches who had a big vision that wanted to turn Nebraska into a volleyball school,
mm-hmm.
and they did it.
Yep.
And so my question to you, DP, is where is this in Michigan State? Do we just not care? Do we not support? Or, you know, just what's going on? Because,
oh. Yeah. I mean, I actually think that, you know, the Michigan State fans and the community would support. I mean, we've seen that with women's basketball.
Yeah.
And so I think that it could be the case at MSU. You look at the golf team right now. Gymnastics, you know, is making noise.
Yeah.
And I think that, yeah, you're right. Why not MSU?
I think the time has come for us to start dreaming big in every sport and saying, you
mm-hmm.
want to know what? We are pursuing excellence in every sport. We're not just worried about football and basketball and hockey.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to every sport should set out to dominate its conference, its league, should set out to become national championships, and should set out to win the community over to the point where Michigan State could host something like this in a football stadium, in Spartan Stadium, and have
mm-hmm.
you know, a gazillion people show up. This is the way it should be done.
Yeah. I mean, full credit to Nebraska for doing this. I mean, what a great idea. Took a page out of the Ron Mason book, you know, with the Cold War game at Spartan Stadium. I mean, you know, tremendous support there. And you're right. Like, when I think about volleyball teams, I wouldn't have thought that. About Nebraska? I mean, if you had told me great volleyball programs, I would have thought in a warm place that's really populated. Like Miami
yeah.
or USC, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nebraska's fantastic. If you build
yeah.
it, they will come. I think that's
yes.
the point.
Yes.
And,
mm-hmm.
and so for moving forward, you know, Michigan State fans should not tolerate mediocrity in any sport.
No.
Right?
Nope.
For far too long, we've tolerated it in hockey. Far too long. And baseball, in almost every
yep.
sport. So you want to know it? No.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, we were headed down that path with women's basketball, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and hopefully things will change. I'm excited to see what will happen with the new coach.
Yeah, same here.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to miss Susie Merchant. Excited about the change.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think that's a good place to wrap things up on. Is there anything else you want to say?
Nope. I think that's a good place to leave it.
All right. That sounds like a plan. We'll leave it here for this edition of Sparty Talk. We'll go back at you, hopefully, after a win against Central Michigan. And hopefully, we'll have fewer technical problems than we did the last time. Bye,
Sparty
bye.
Talk stumbling out of the gate.
Stumbling out of the gate. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.